Hey everyone, and welcome back to your exclusive daily Linux and open source news podcast. So, today we'll start by talking about Deepin. This is a distro you probably have heard about. It's a sort of Debian-based, Chinese-made distribution that comes with its very own store for applications and also its very own desktop environment called Deepin DE, which you can obviously use on other distributions. I'm pretty sure there's a Ubuntu version that has it, and plenty of other distros probably offer it. Well, Deepin is going all in on AI assistance and AI features in general, but they're doing it in an interesting way. First is a new personal knowledge assistant. And the way this thing works is you just feed it your own documents and the AI will arrange them into a knowledge base that you can use in the future. It is not a general purpose AI chatbot trained on internet media, internet sources or articles. It's only going to know what you gave it yourself. So it is pretty useful for researchers on certain topics or when you're writing long student papers, and it all runs locally on the device with a local model, which means it also requires a relatively powerful CPU to be able to compile and train on all this data. The second part of their AI efforts is the Deepin System Assistant. This thing is meant to explain how the system works to users. It's basically technical support in a built-in AI chatbot. It will give you answers to questions regarding the system features, the settings, the shortcuts for specific actions, and more. So it's basically an AI assistant for your manual pages of the Deepin desktop, and so this thing is presumably only trained on the manual pages and runs locally as well. Finally, they added AI to the system-wide search feature. This is a thing they call Grand Search, but it's basically just KRunner. This thing lets you tell your system what you want to do, and it will do it for you. You can say, for example, change my wallpaper, or change the audio volume to 50%, or reduce the brightness of the display. And the model this thing uses apparently accepts large language models in the OpenAI format, so it is possible to extend it with more features and commands. On this one, I am not sure if it runs locally or if it calls to a server on the Deepin side of things. Not sure. Now, if you want to test these features, they're available in the Deepin 23 release candidate that you can download today. I think it's an interesting use of AI. The fact that some of these tools run locally gives me hope that there is a path where Linux distributions could add some very useful features, because as much as I criticize AI all the time, what I'm criticizing is how it is built right now in the big names of AI, where they don't care where the content comes from, where it's privacy invasive. If you have access to the same features run locally with ethically sourced or manually fed data, I don't really have a problem with it. And so this could add some useful features even for other Linux distributions. For example, for beginners and tech support, having a solid database on how to fix certain problems on your system could be good. Having a private assistant that helps you for the tasks you trained it to do is pretty cool as well. And it doesn't cave in to the potentially unethical and privacy invasive big names in AI. Now, of course, here it is Deepin. Some people will inherently distrust anything that comes from this distro because it's from China and a lot of people have a problem with things that come from China. But it is still an interesting proof of concept. I might give it a shot next month doing a dedicated video. I will probably ask you patrons and YouTube members to vote on that so you can tell me if that's something that might interest you. Now, still on AI, Cloudflare, the popular content delivery network, is adding features to let their customers block AI bots from scraping their content. They will automatically detect these bots even when they masquerade as a real user by spoofing their user agent. Now, funnily enough, this detection feature has been made possible by a machine learning model, meaning that it's an AI detecting other AIs and blocking it. And this thing attributes a trust score to every visit. Most AI bots apparently land on a score of under 30 out of 100, and so it's relatively simple for Cloudflare to identify these bots and block them if the customer using Cloudflare so chooses. This has been based on apparently 57 million requests per second on their entire CDN, so it should definitely have enough data to be refined and to work properly. Although, as always, this will be a cat and mouse game where AI bots will be improved to escape this detection, and the detection system will be modified to take these changes into account, rinse and repeat. Ultimately, this is a game that content providers and Cloudflare will lose, because for the short periods of time where the detection system will let these bots slip through, they will scrape the content and add it to their database, to their knowledge base, and it will never be unlearned after that. The only real solution to prevent this scraping from happening is with a global and enforceable preference on websites that AI bots would have to follow. And until there is a law to force them to do so, I don't think it will happen at all. And finally, we have some more progress on FEX, the x86 emulator for ARM on Linux. There's a big update to it that now enables support for the AVX and AVX2 instructions that modern x86 CPUs have and that a lot of games are using. This is on top of a bunch of other instructions now being supported with barbaric names like FMA3, VAES, or VPCLMULQDQ. Yes, that is a real one. It apparently exists. Now, to make things short, it lets you run games like Metro Exodus or Crysis 3 Remastered or Death Stranding on an ARM CPU that doesn't have access to these AVX instructions, thanks to the emulator. It will apparently work on very recent and pretty rare ARM CPUs that have access to 256-bit SVE. These are extensions to the ARM instruction set that basically do the same thing as the AVX instructions on x86 CPUs. It's basically mapping instructions for an x86 CPU to the relevant one that ARM CPUs have. It's more like a translation than pure emulation. This emulation will also work on older ARM CPUs that only have 128-bit SVE, even though the performance will likely not be as good because instructions will have to be split in two because, well, these ARM CPUs don't have as many registers to handle these instructions as 256-bit CPUs would have. Well, 256-bit SVE-enabled CPUs would have. So the general optimizations provided to the emulator also reduce, apparently, the translation time by 10%. So that's a very solid performance boost as well. And if you're wondering why this all matters, you don't care, you use an Intel or AMD CPU, chances are in the future, ARM will be a lot more prevalent in consumer devices because right now they do offer a better performance per watt compromise and they can reach performance levels comparable or higher than x86 CPUs. So we will see them more and more in consumer PCs, even from Linux manufacturers. Even Tuxedo has a prototype with a Qualcomm CPU in it that is from ARM. And so having a solid x86 emulator on Linux is absolutely crucial. macOS has one, Windows is working on one, although the last time I heard about it wasn't great, but apparently they improved it quite a bit. If we don't want to lose all the work that has been done on Proton, on Wine, on Linux gaming, we need to have access to this emulator. Our open source software will always be able to be compiled for ARM with more or less work and more or less problems, but proprietary stuff that is only for x86 CPUs and doesn't support Linux natively, we need an emulator to be able to run that in the future. Even if newer games are at some point provided with an ARM version for Windows that we could also run with an ARM version of Proton on an ARM Linux system, older games will never receive the same treatment. They will stay x86 only. And thus, we do need this emulator to keep backwards compatibility. So having FEX in a really good place right now, I think, is a fantastic thing for Linux in general. Okay, so this will conclude today's episode. I hope you enjoyed listening to it. As always, thank you all for supporting what I do. And I guess you will hear me in the next one next week on Monday. Bye!